From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 21st day of January, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, I'll update you on the agricultural news for the afternoon, including the RFS, the SREs, ethanol, and dicamba as well. There are some new regulations there for producers applying that to soybean in Illinois and across the Midwest, corn for that matter. And we'll also hear from both U.S. senators from the state of Illinois on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. March corn today finished 2.25 cents higher at $5.24 and a quarter. The May at $5.26 and a quarter, up 2 and a quarter. And December down 0.25 cents at $4.48 and three quarters. The March soybeans $13.70 and a quarter, up 3 quarters. May up 1.5 cents at $13.68 and three quarters. And November beans at $11.68 and a half, 3 and a quarter lower. The bean meal down $4.20. The bean oil up 89 for the day. Wheat futures soft red down 7. They finished at 660 and three quarters, and the hard red at 635 and three quarters, a penny and a quarter lower for the afternoon. Taking a quick look at live cattle futures, they finished the day 75 cents higher at 114.10. The feeders at 139.15, $1.62 and a half higher, and lean hogs were down 32.5 cents at $68.10. We're now joined by Matt Bennett at agmarket.net to take a look at the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
It appeared to be an interesting trade overnight and into the day trade. What can you tell me about it?
Yeah, and so, you know, the overnight trade kind of built some steam as we went through and saw pretty nice gains on the corn and double-digit gains on soybeans. This morning, I guess, as we opened up, we gave back a little of those gains, but it seemed like the corn market kind of wanted to take the lead, and we're having a hard time really beating it down. But you know, middle of the day, both corn and beans kind of fell back off a little bit, but then towards the close, corn actually looked like it was going to settle up 3 or 4. Right at the very end, though, it looks to me like, you know, the settlement is only going to be up 1 to 2, whereas beans, you're going to be looking at virtually unchanged to off a little bit, especially on the deferred month. So kind of a quiet, dead trade, really, especially compared to what we've seen here the last several weeks.
What are your expectations going through the next couple of months?
Well, I would say here in the short term especially, it looks to me like it's going to take quite a bit to get this market to move. I feel like this week we threw some stuff at it. Market certainly struggled for a couple of days, but we stabilized, in my opinion there, Wednesday into the close. Corn market settled towards the upper end of the range there on Wednesday, and I think that kind of set the table for a decent trade here on Thursday. I guess we're going to be watching South American weather fairly closely, but at the same time, I think the trade is well aware that you've got very tight carryout levels on soybeans and potentially have much tighter carryout levels on corn than what the USDA might have said there in the January report. You look at a little pullback here this week, and then all of a sudden we had really good export sales that were posted this morning on the Daily Wire. So, you know, demand's not slowing down any, even at these elevated prices. So that tells me we're probably looking at range bound, at least for now, whereas in the month of February, you could get into some sort of an acreage battle, given the fact that, we've got so much profitability in several different crops right now.
Corn has become a recent short crop supply in the United States. That from USDA's numbers released in January, just not very long ago. And I'm wondering what we know about short crops going into the February, March, April timeframe, as the trade generally turns its attention to the U.S. new crop and how they impact one another.
Yeah, I mean, typically whenever you've got a short crop like this, and the market obviously is going to react to that, and you've got pretty decent prices, A lot of times you'll see the market, as you say, shift its focus towards new crop, and maybe the shine wears off a little bit because people start talking about big acreage. But at the same time, this year you've got a situation in the Western Corn Belt, whereas we're excessively dry, even in parts of Illinois, of course. Right where I'm at, we're not too bad, but you get up in your neck of the woods and it's definitely a lot drier. People are paying very close attention to this, and so I gotta think that any weakness that we see is likely to be supported, and I think that there'll be a fair amount of buying come in until we know a couple of different things. And one of those is going to be, what kind of acreage are we looking at here in the U.S.? What's the South American safrinha crop going to look like as far as the size ends up being there? Because I do think you're going to need a pretty good sized crop both in South America and the U.S. for both corn and soybeans. And I think anything short of those, you're probably looking at least supported markets, maybe very dynamic markets this summer.
If fundamentals don't change from South America at this point, has the acreage battle in Chicago as it relates to U.S. corn and soybean numbers been completed? Meaning, are new crop prices about where they should be?
That's a really good question. I would say new crop prices, though, with 11.65 as far as November beans go, and 4.47 on December corn, around 2.6-1 ratio, it probably tells me beans could win out as far as the swing acres go. And I've heard a lot of people, whether it's producers or people in the seed industry, talking, about a fair amount of soybeans this year. So, I saw some numbers came out, a private estimate over 94 million acres of corn today and a little over 90 on soybeans. I think that's believable, but I guess I've got to think that corn and bean acreage might be a lot closer than a 4 million acre gap. So, has prices done enough yet? That's a great question. But you look over to the wheat pit and you've got July wheat at 6.45, December wheat 6.51. I mean, those are pretty profitable areas for any wheat grower. So cotton's still pushing this $80 level, and so I've got to think there's several different crops that are going to try to at least hold on to their acreage. And that might not bode well for corn and beans jumping substantially, but I guess I'm still at least 91.5, 92 of each.
I have a final question for you. This relates to the lack of travel and meetings this winter. How much has that caused a problem, if any, for you and others in the industry to get a fix on what producers are thinking they're going to do for the 2021 growing season?
Yeah, that's a great question. Typically, as you know, whenever you're together, obviously, there's an hour of a meeting or so, maybe a couple of hours of a meeting, and then there's a fair amount of social interaction, a lot of talking, cuss and discuss what's going on out in the countryside. And so we're not getting that this year. I've been trying to definitely talk to as many producers as I can, but there's no doubt that it's going to be tougher to get a feel for what's going on out there whenever we're not able to talk face to face. I think people let their guards down a little bit, especially if they go to happy hour. But I think that you've got to think that it's going to be tougher to really get a handle on what's going on. But I've talked to a lot of producers already. I feel pretty confident that that I've got a good handle on where acreage would lie for the time being. As far as sales strategies go, I think as well, we've got a pretty good idea where people are. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out because I don't, I can't imagine I've got as good a feel for it as I normally
Well, here's to future happy hours and meetings in person. Hey,
would.
thank you so much. You have a great day.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tom.
That is Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, during the final hours of the Trump administration, the EPA granted three small refinery exemptions under the Renewable Fuel Standard, the RFS. The U.S. Court of Appeals ordered the EPA's action must be administratively stayed pending further court orders. Now, Monty Shaw is the executive director of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association. He says not only should the waivers not have gotten granted, but the way the petitioner stays anonymous makes it even more inexcusable.
We don't know anything about them. I mean, right away, the EPA should come in and reverse the completely indefensible decision by the Trump EPA of saying who's requested these and who's been granted these as confidential business information. Let's just say that that's not right. People who are getting exemptions from their Clean Air Act obligations, we need to know who they are so we can scrutinize them and make sure that that process is a fair one.
The order prevents the EPA from further processing those exemptions until the court has had the opportunity to consider the emergency motion for a stay. The EPA has until February 3 to respond to the motion, and any replies are due to the court by February the 10th. Iowa's Monty Shaw says the ethanol industry just wants the RFS to be enforced as it is written. Well, the Biden administration is reviewing a whole host of policies enacted just as Mr. Trump was leaving office. These include relisting of Cuba as a state sponsor of terrorism, and it complicates ag and other trade with Cuba that has been hindered by a decades-old embargo that some key lawmakers tried to end in 2017, including the senior senator from the state of Illinois, Dick Durbin.
We tried it for 50 years. We said if we closed the door on Cuba, Cuba would change. We did not succeed in that policy. It's time for a new policy, a policy that we know is proven to work. Look at what happened when the Soviet Union finally disintegrated. It disintegrated because the Warsaw Pact nations and many Soviet republics took a look outside and said there's a better world to the West. Well, the same is true when it comes to Cuba.
Well, Durbin predicts Cuba will change with more travel, trade, and internet, while Cuban-American lawmakers and President Trump say the Cuban regime has only stepped up the silencing of its critics. Here's the American Farm Bureau trade advisor's Dave Samuelson on the subject.
At least in the beginning of this administration, if there's going to be any movement on Cuba issues, certainly the State Department will have a large role in that. And then potentially, or at the same time, the same issues of agricultural credit financing, the inability of U.S. agriculture to use that with Cuba. You know, those are still there.
U.S. farm sales to Cuba have fallen from about $700 million at the beginning of the last decade to around $200 million annually in more recent years. And finally today, there's a new label for dicamba applied to soybean, to cotton as well, and it includes a whole slew of new restrictions that farmers need to be aware of. Now, last fall, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, announced new five-year registrations for the dicamba-containing products Xtendimax, Engenia, and Tavian. These labels include new and or additional application restrictions. For instance, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager, the herbicides can only be used on dicamba-resistant soybean.
Do you remember the labels of the initial products? For the last 3 or 4 years have included essentially a similar listing of crops as you would find on the Clarity label. That is no longer the case. So, you know, for example, Xtendimax now cannot be applied to a cornfield.
There are also new restrictions as it relates to the buffer zones and endangered species, says Extension's Hager. That last note is really important because the list of Illinois counties in the Endangered Species Protection Bulletin that can be found on the government's EPA website sometimes changes.
One of the biggest potential consequences of this would be farmers or applicators in 5 or 6 counties that may not even be aware that now the new buffer requirements apply to them as well, since they are now in a county with endangered species.
Some Illinois counties have been taken off of that list. Others have been added. There are 5 different counties on the 2021 Endangered Species Protection Bulletin list than in previous years. These are Grundy, Kankakee, Livingston, Effingham, and Marion. The full 2021 list includes 18 Illinois counties. Even with the 5 additional counties, that number is down from the 27 that were listed back in the year 2019. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, let's come back to ethanol and the renewable fuel standard of the RFS as we change from the Trump administration to the Biden administration. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois led a group of senators in writing a letter to President Biden emphasizing the importance of the RFS to producers across the region. Illinois Newsroom's agriculture reporter Dana Cronin spoke with Senator Duckworth about the letter and how she thinks agricultural policy will change under the Biden administration.
Time and again, the Trump administration worked very hard to undermine the RFS, and they really hurt our farmers only to help big oil companies and go against everything that our RFS stands for. So what I want to make sure is to make sure that the EPA, for example, rejects any future petitions for the small refinery exemptions that do not meet the necessary standards. I want the EPA to very quickly publish renewable volume obligations so we know exactly what the ethanol volume obligation needs to be and so that we can stick to it. And then I also want them to approve the pending applications that are in right now already for corn kernel fiber ethanol, and then update their biofuel emissions modeling to allow these fuels to be commercialized. And then, of course, we need to make sure that we include biofuels in our commitment to the Paris Accord. When I spoke with President-elect Biden, I told him, you know, the first day that you get back after you swear your oath of office and then get sworn in, I hope that you rejoin the Paris Accords. But as part of that, I want biofuels to be part of our commitment to the Paris Accords.
And why is it important to you that President Biden address that issue so early on in his term?
Well, because I need to make it clear, and we need to have that commitment to our agricultural sector that we are going to stick with biofuels. I mean, bottom line, we can't get to a carbon neutral future without biofuels. We just simply can't get there. You can't get there just on solar. You can't get there just on wind. You can't get there on any single fuel source. And biofuels are a critical part of that. And by the way, biofuels are purely American, right? It's American grown, American produced. And so it's not something that we're relying for, oil from outside of the United States. And so I think it's really important that biofuels are part of that catalog of fuels that are going to get us to that carbon neutral future. And of course, it's going to support our ag sector, which is vital, vital for our national security. I think people think of ag and they just think of food, right? But what I tell people is ag is national security. Ag is just as important for our national security as our tanks and guns and helicopters. A nation that can't feed itself is not a nation that can lead the free world. And so we need to make sure that we maintain our commitment to ag. And one of the ways to do that is to allow them to do what they do best, which is be very, very inventive, be very, very productive, and work on and support biofuels, because it's one of the ways that ag can actually produce and support our country.
I'm curious, Senator Duckworth, how do you see agriculture policy more broadly changing under this new Biden-Harris administration?
I think you're going to see a real support for family farms and small farms. I think you're going to see continued support for investments in bringing people back to ag at the same time as a commitment that you can count on for biofuel, so that you're not, it's not a, you know, year to year grant, not a year to year tax waiver, that you're going to know for the next 5 years or for the next 10 years, we're going to make a commitment to biofuels and it's going to be there. And you can plan on it and you can make your capital investments necessary for you to be able to grow your operation to produce the necessary biofuels.
That was U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth from the state of Illinois. She spoke with Illinois Newsroom's agriculture reporter, Dana Cronin. Let us turn our attention on this Thursday afternoon to the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Mike Tenura is now here. He's at T-Storm in Chicago. It's a gorgeous day here in the United States. Mike, I hope you're enjoying it.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Bright blue, sunny skies in the middle of the winter. You've got to love it.
Well, let's talk about those skies in just a bit. But can we start in South America? Begin with Argentina. The weather forecast have been changing there and I think improving.
Well, it certainly has. And that's because of several rains that have fallen over the last few weeks. It was only about a month ago that we were concerned about a drought in Argentina. And the situation has improved quite a bit because we saw some rains at the very end of December. And then we've seen about three more since then. We also have some additional rains coming up next week. And between all of that, there just won't be a whole lot of dryness concerns as we head into February. Now, we need to keep in mind a couple of different things. Number one, we still need to see the rains verify next week. So it's not totally a certainty that the situation has 100% improved, but it certainly is trending in that direction. The other thing we need to keep in mind is that even if it does rain next week, it's really important what happens in February, because that's when soybeans start to turn sensitive, and then that continues all the way into March. So we're not totally out of the woods yet, but the situation in Argentina, as it stands now, looks much better than it did 3 to 4 weeks ago.
And that is also the case in Brazil?
Well, Brazil's also been seeing some rains. We had an extremely dry October, an extremely dry November, a very dry December, and then it's been raining here and there ever since. And so the situation has improved a little bit in that, yes, it has been raining. As we move forward, the northeast third of soybeans in Brazil are going to end up fairly dry over the next week. And that's because of upper-level high pressure that's centered in the northeastern growing region. The southern growing region and Paraguay will also benefit from this setup, or should say will benefit from this setup, simply because they're going to see some decent rains along the edge of that high. And so you can kind of look at Brazil in a couple of different ways. You can say, well, yes, they received some rain, so things are improved. And it's also going to continue to rain along the southern and western edge of the soybean crop, so things will continue to improve. On the other hand, that northeastern growing region, which again is about a third of soybeans, doesn't look all that good in terms of rainfall over the next week or so. So kind of a mixed bag in Brazil, with the situation currently better than it was a few weeks ago, that we would like to see more rain across a wider area in the near term.
Here in the United States, the farm community has been rumbling for a while about the drought in the western part of the U.S., and it's just not a small drought. It's a large area there. Do you have concerns?
Not yet, and the reason is pretty simple. There's very little to no correlation between weather in the autumn and winter and weather in the spring and summer. You can look at different examples going back in time and point out years like 1988, where a drought started in the fall and then lasted through the winter and went right into the summer, and that's why we had a poor crop. But there's lots of other examples where that wasn't the case. So we just don't really want to draw too big of a conclusion from what's been going on over the last 3 to 6 months and what might be coming up over the next 3 to 6 months. If you look at similar La Niñas to the one that we're in at the moment, a lot of them ended up turning out to be just fine for corn, soybeans, and wheat across the United States. Of course, there's always some examples where that wasn't the case, but just the fact that we can look back into the past and see that similar setups to the one that we're in now resulted in both great crops and poor crops tells us that the risk to wheat and corn and soybeans are basically pretty much normal for this time of the year. We wouldn't want to start drawing conclusions where we think that it's going to suddenly turn into a big drought this spring and summer. And conversely, we don't want to say that things are going to turn out just fine. Typically, as it is in the start of every year, you end up in a situation where you pretty much have the same yield risk as you would in any other season. And even though it is dry and it has been very, very mild, including what's going to end up being one of the 10 mildest November, December, January periods of the last 126 years, we still just don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, because we know that things can change. And if they do, suddenly everybody would have forgotten about what we're talking about today.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yep, great being here, and we'll talk next week.
Indeed we will. That's Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois.